It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're at. Welcome to another episode of Advantage Connors. Brett Connors here with Jimmy Connors. How are you today?
I'm back in California. Made a little trip down, to Palm Beach to get away for a couple of days. Got to see Aubrey. Mom went with me down there this time, so she got to see Aubs and place and her dog Frankie and all the cats and got to spend a few days. Got away from Santa Barbara, but got back last night. That's a long trip, I will say. Coming back this way, by the time you leave the hotel and pull up in the yard, it's about, 11, 12 hours. So a little tired today, but glad to be back with you.
I'm glad you had a good trip down there. Saw Obbs and Casey and the pups. I saw Aubrey sent me a video of Frank and Mom. Frank, her dog is as big as Mom. She was like jumping up on her.
Yeah. He's about 80 pounds now. I think he's a little over a year old and high energy, 80 pounds. And, we have Bogey, our little schnauzer. And, he doesn't dish out a lot of kisses. He, he likes being around and being close, but, he's pretty selfish giving out kisses. But Frankie, oh, my God, Mom came home. She says, I just had a good cleaning, got a lot of kisses on the face. And it was quite a change from our little Bogey. But, we had a good time, 4 or 5 days. It was long enough at the time. And looking forward to going back again. Be fun.
Nice. Yeah, you chose a good day to come home on. I'm sitting here in robe life. I got my robe on. It's cloudy. It rained a lot last night. Kind of think this might be the last good rain that we see in California, maybe till the fall. Seems like this might be the last effort. So wanted to enjoy it. It's cozy. Got my warm tea, and I'm ready to talk some Advantage Connors with you. So I know you've been on the road traveling, doing a lot. So you probably haven't been watching a lot of the Miami Open. So I just wanted to kind of update. I don't want to talk too much specifics because we'll put this out tomorrow and then, some of the results will be dated. But some of the players who are doing well are some of the players who did well in Indian Wells. Elena Rybakina still going. She gets Jessica Pegula later tonight. I'm going in about an hour and a half to work that match. And also our guy Carlitos Alcaraz has been rolling along. He plays Taylor Fritz. So we'll see how they go. Let me see what else. Medvedev keeps rolling along.
I heard an interesting, something interesting that Alcaraz had to say. They said, who was his hero? Did you happen to see that, Brett?
I didn't.
Said, so, well, who Sylvester did he say? Stallone.
Really?
I said, how interesting is that? I mean, but look at some of the movies that he's put out from Rocky to First Blood to Rambo and now with Tulsa Kings. I mean, he's high energy and stay in there and do what it takes to come out on top and to know where you stand. And I mean, that was a pretty interesting pick out of politics, out of other sports, out of business, he picks Stallone and obviously from the inspiration of his movies. Pretty interesting. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I like it. I like Stallone. You know, I kind of like the Tango and Cash version of him. If you remember that movie with Kurt Russell when they went to prison.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Remember the movie Tango and Cash where he's the crooked, or he's the cop, he gets framed, he gets put in jail. Jack Palance is the crooked warden or whatever it is. So yeah, I like Stallone. You know, he gets kind of thought of as just, you know, he does a lot of those action movies, but what got him into the limelight was, you know, being smart. He wrote Rocky. You know, people just think he acted in it, but he wrote it. And instead of selling it for whatever at the time, a couple $100,000, I think they tried to buy him out of it. They really didn't want him to act in it. And so, you know, they offered him, you know, $200,000-$300,000. Hey, we'll buy the script. Just don't act in it. And he said, nah, like it's a combo deal. You get the script, you get me. And thankfully he did that. And now he's, become Carlitos's hero, which is an interesting one.
Yeah. You know, I go back and look at that. And I remember that story also that they wanted to buy him out of that. But all those, the Rockies and the Rambos wouldn't have been without him. I mean, he's the one that, you know, got into the character and made the character what it was. And, you know, in Rocky, the rise to the top and what it took to, you know, to take somebody from the streets to the, you know, to number one and heartwarming, that you see something like that and you believe it. And he made you believe that. So, you know, if you see that can happen and Alcaraz chooses that as an inspiration. I mean, you know, just think of the drive that he's going to have when he walks out onto a tennis court. Mm-hmm. And he has, you know, not only the game, but that mental drive and that toughness. Oh, there I go again. I'm sorry. But he has that mental drive and toughness to stay in there and grind out all those matches that he plays against all these players that he's against now. So mm-hmm. Yeah, not a bad pick. I'm all for that pick. Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, he continues to play well. I mean, he's got a tough match against Fritz tonight, but a lot of the men's side is shaping up like Indian Wells. I mean, Sinner's already there waiting for the winner of Fritz Alcaraz, so we might get a rematch of Alcaraz Sinner. Interested to see the Miami courts seem to be playing a lot faster than Indian Wells. I saw a quote from Cerundolo, the guy who made semifinals and now he's in the quarters this year against Khachanov. They're actually playing right now. He said it's like two different tournaments. He's like last year compared to this year. He's like last year was way slower. This year's a lot faster. So just interested to see the difference court speeds when Sinner plays Alcaraz, because I think that's kind of what
it's going to be interesting to hear Medvedev then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because wasn't he complaining in Indian Wells about the court being, you know, maybe even slower than before?
Yeah, yep. And he's doing well too. He probably looks like it's going to be him versus Khachanov on that side, and then either Fritz or Alcaraz versus Sinner. Then on the women's side, we got Rybakina. She just keeps rolling along, our girl Elena.
Yeah, how about that? Good for her.
Yep, handling her business. Jessica Pegula saved some match points the other night, so they have a good match later tonight. And then Sorana Cirstea takes out our girl Sabby yesterday in straight sets, I think 4-4. She's had an amazing run. You know, she beat, I think, who'd she beat? No, Garcia twice in a row. She beat Garcia at Indian Wells, then this week. So Cirstea is waiting for the winner of Kvitova Alexandrova. Kvitova is up a set right now. Talk to me about what any of that stuff. What do you think?
Well, Kvitova, that there's a name from the past, you know, coming out and playing some decent tennis now too, right? So
yep.
That might be a good start. But
when she likes those faster courts, her doing well kind of makes you think that the courts must be playing, you know, decently fast because, you know, she doesn't like those long, slow, kind of grindy.
Point, because didn't with the grand she won, was it at the Wimbledon? Didn't she win Wimbledon?
Twice, yep.
Yeah, so, you know, those faster courts, you know, are going to do her some good. So, yeah, but it's interesting. It's a good couple of weeks going from Palm Springs on the hard courts to down to Miami to get, the couple of weeks back-to-back. So you kind of get into a little rhythm and a little flow of how your game is going to match up to the surface. Even though most surfaces are the same, and we talk about that all the time. But, you know, to have Miami go to a little faster is kind of, that's interesting because, you know, with Medvedev coming out and saying what he said about the course being a little, maybe too slow for his liking in Palm Springs. And, you know, maybe, you know, that's going to start changing a little bit to where the courts are going to be a little bit faster, as opposed to, you know, so many long and
slower points
and hard hitting rounds, a little more variety and you know, little shorter points. So might be interesting to see, you know, how that catches on, not only now, but, you know, for the rest of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I like the variety of court speeds. I like it when, you know, okay, now this week, these players are going to be tough, you know, or in the next week, well, they're not going to be so tough because it slows down, or vice versa, or whatever it is. You know, it's cool to have like the different varieties and strategies and the, you know, then different players can bubble up and do well. One player who's done really well this week is Mr. Chris Eubanks, the American, young American guy. He went to college, Georgia Tech. I think he's like 24, mm-hmm. 25, something like that. Has been a announcer for Tennis Channel. I've worked with him a little bit. He's a really nice guy. Came through the qualifying and made the quarters. Losing today to Medvedev. I think that's what it was, quarters. But either way, he's into the top 100, and then all of a sudden he's in the top 90. Now he's, I think, 86 in the world. His dad said something like, try and get out of the first round. And he ends up making, I think, like the quarterfinals, which is, you know, pretty damn good.
Yeah, heck yeah. In a Masters 1000 tournament like that, you know, the rounds start tough from the very beginning. And, you know, but you know what I like, what you said, Brad, is that he came through the qualies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he was matched tough when you can look at that two ways. One, he came through the qualies. He might be a little tired. But I would look at it like he came through the qualies. You've had to play a couple matches to get into the main draw. So he was kind of match tough right away, right, you know, going into the first round. Because, you know, I remember, you know, our conversation with our buddy Bjorn Borg, where he said, you know, when he got into Wimbledon, you know, the first couple rounds, that's when you wanted him. Mm-hmm. You know, before he got his rhythm and got into the flow of the tournament. Well, you know, he went from the qualies right into it because his flow was going. So he might have caught a couple guys off guard, which sometimes is pretty good.
Yep. And then also, I think, I mean, he's a big guy. He's like 6'7", and, you know, he goes for his shots. He's not a long rally guy. I think that also kind of proves the court speed being a little fast, which makes Sabalenka's loss more surprising. I mean, Svestea's, you know, she's not a big power hitter. She's, you know, steady and you know, keeps balls in play and is really athletic and fast. But Sabalenka seems mm-hmm. to be one of those players right now where, except for maybe against like Iga, a couple players, the match is on her racket, you know, because of her big shots and going right for it. Like if she's hitting that day and not double faulting, then she's going to be tough to beat. But if she's, you know, going for the line and missing by a little and throwing in six double faults like she did in the two sets the other day at bad times, then, you know, then she's going to take herself out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what Pancho always used to call, you got to tighten up your game, you know, and know that, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, you got to get the ball in play. You got to make your opponent beat you instead of giving away too many free points, you know, double faults. Free points, miss and return of serves, free points, you know, especially second serves. So, you know, but, you know, that's growing, that's learning, you know, the experience and, you know, having your team understand that also, that, you know, can kind of get that through to her that, look, we got to work on making sure that you're not losing it, that if you don't win, that your opponent's beating you and you're not giving it to them. And so if she tightens up her game a little bit and goes through that, and it might take a minute, you know, to get over, you know, some of the flaws, because let's face it, you know, tennis, no, you never reach perfection in that. You're trying to, and that's why we're out there practicing and working and you know, to try to counteract all that. But, you know, she'll get over that, and once she figures that out, then, you know, she's going to be tough on a day. She's already tough on a daily basis, but just going to take her to another level.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder though, you know, like when we talk to Bjorn, because like in my mind, I'm like, if I'm her coach, I'm like, look, Sabby, if you get out there and you're missing serves and you're like, fuck, I'm 75% today, you know, like, you know, you're not 100%. you know, is she the kind of player you can say, hey, you know, pull it back, keep some balls in play, you know, go 85% on the first serve, or, you know, whatever, just make sure you don't double, you know, like, is she the type of player that can kind of pull back and play like a second kind of game, you know, where like all of a sudden she needs to keep more balls in play, you know, maybe doesn't rely on her power and ending points quick so much, you know, because that's kind of what she is, you know, and like when Bjorn said, mm-hmm. like a lot of the players, they just play the one way because that's how they know to play it so great. Is Sabby the type of player who you think has the ability to do that? Because she's a good clay court player. She has good clay court results. And, you know, she won, I mean, you know, didn't win runner up last week in Indian Wells, where those courts are slower than this week. So, you know, right. she can do well on the courts that, you know, take longer rallies and you know, more, you know, longer points. But what do you think?
I think sometimes, I know I was guilty of this, talking to Bjorn also, sometimes you get in such a rhythm where you think you have to go for a shot or go for a winner a little bit too soon, mm-hmm. You know, and whoops, I'm in a position, or I'm winded, or, you know, something might go through your mind, so I'm going to go for that a little bit too soon, and which puts a little bit too much pressure on yourself to make the shot, as opposed to maybe hitting one more shot or two more shots and waiting for a better chance.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of, you know, the mental part of the game, and, you know, being able to say, listen, I can withstand almost anything, you know, being in good shape and being able to take whatever my opponent gives to me. You know, it's easy to sit here in this chair and say, you know, that's what she has to do. But I think, and it's like Bjorn said, that if you had a plan B and even a plan C, and it doesn't have to be that much difference in from your normal game. Mm-hmm. It's your normal game with just a little variety somewhere along the line, whether it's, you know, keeping one or two more balls in play, or not going for such a big shot as a winner and letting your opponent actually
beat themselves,
run it down, but then the next shot just opens your court. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do that, but, you know, but, you know, like I said before, you got to play the game that got you there.
Right.
And whatever that is, you got to make sure you do that really well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. Because with Sabby, it's not like, you know, sometimes when you'll be like, you know, she goes for a little too much. You're like, you're not saying she needs to hit eight more balls, but just maybe like one more ball. You know, like,
exactly.
like she already has the advantage to where she thinks she can go for the winner. You know, put her in the corner one more time, or go behind her, and then then the next shot's going to be even that much easier for her.
Right.
So
well, yeah, you know, like I said, you know, experiences is very valuable. You know, but sometimes by the time you get all that experience, you're too damn old to do anything with it.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
But I think I think you're right. I think this year so far for Sabby has been great. You know what I mean? Like, she started off the year undefeated. She gets her first slam. She gets a title before that down under, you know, and then, you know, whatever, takes a loss to Krejcikova in a good match, but then comes back, good result in Indian Wells, you know, plays Rybakina. That's going to be a little bit of a rivalry, I feel like. You know, they're similar, mm-hmm. similar style players, big, hit the ball hard, good servers, you know, and then like this week, okay, she loses to Sustate. But like, I think all the things she's done, she's gained some new experience, like getting the slam, coming from a set down,
right.
a runner up at another Masters 1000 against somebody she's going to see a lot, you know, so she gets to play her again, you know, and this is just a little trip up. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I just, I like talking about her because she's a fun player and we like her. So, okay.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Before we move on, give me your winners from Miami.
Oh,
give me your winner. Are you going to go against there's a chance for two sunshine doubles. Elena and Carlos are still alive. So do they both get it? Does one get it? Do neither? Tell me.
I think that it's going to be Medvedev once again against Alcaraz.
Okay.
And which is going to be interesting. And actually, I would like to see that, because I would like to see how Medvedev bounces back from the hammering that he got in Indian Wells.
Yeah, that's a good call, to see the adjustments he would make.
Yep. I'd be interested in see that. And let's see, what was in the women's, you said?
It's Rybakina and Pegula. And then it looks like it's going to be Kvitova against Hristeia.
Actually, I'd like to see Kvitova get to the final.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. It, you know, would be, you know, old school player and somebody that stayed in there and really, you know, it went through some tough times, and now coming back against these young kids, and, you know, she's been willing to pay the price, you know, to get her game back in order and her conditioning and everything to be able to compete against the great young players. So, you know, for her to get to the finals, that would be exciting.
Yep.
And to see if her stamina, you know, to hold up over a 10 or 12 day tournament, you know, like a Miami, and especially also down in that heat, it's hot down there. And
yeah,
that would
true.
Be what a boost for her. That would be exciting.
Yep. She's playing right now. She's up a set against Alexandrova. So she hasn't made it to the semis yet, but,
my mistake.
No, it's okay. It's okay. But I mean, yep. it's still good talking points. I mean, I like Kvitova a lot too. I think the way she handled the whole, you know, breaking into her house, stabbing thing is unbelievable. It's like kind of the most unreported on right. sports story in like the last 10 years or so, 20 years, it feels like to me, cause she handled it so well and just kind of was low key about it. And then on the other side, Pegula Rybakina fascinates me. I think Pegula is 2-0 against her, maybe. Mm. And Pegula saved match points in a long match the other night against Potapova. I like watching Pegula. She's a grinder and she just keeps, you know, getting wins yeah. over big players. And so I'm interested to see that one because, you know, is Rybakina eventually, is she going to get tired? You know, because she keeps winning. You know, she wins Indian Wells, travels, comes here, just keeps on winning. You know, is she eventually going to hit a wall or is she going to be able to just, you know, take this hot streak, you know, on to another, you know, Masters 1000 title? What do you think?
Well, you know, when I was on a roll, I liked staying on it, you know, playing. You know, I didn't, you know, win a tournament and then say, well, I better take a week or two off. And, you know, I wanted to play another tournament. I wanted to keep my, you know, my streak and my conditioning and my confidence going. And you said it right, Pegula. She's a grinder. You know, she's willing to stay in there and do what it takes to try to get stuck in the match. But it's going to, if this streak keeps going, I mean, she's got to be playing with a lot of confidence now, winning last week and now coming into this tournament and still playing at that level. So that's going to be an interesting match. That's whoever wins that match. Ooh, that's going to take a lot out of them, but it's going to be fun to watch.
Definitely. Yeah. 2-0. They actually played here last year. Pegula got her in straights. So looking forward to working that one. We expanded our menu. Now choose from 30 plus recipes weekly with the option to mix and match meals from different dietary preferences in the same box without changing your plan. Vegan one day, keto the next. It's all good. Craving more servings of a favorite recipe? Now you can double the portions in your weekly order with just one click. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well with dinners that work for you, not the other way around. With Green Chef, you're reducing your food waste by up to 38% versus grocery shopping. What I love about Green Chef is that it's easy. I work a lot, I'm on the go, I don't have a lot of time to get to the store and cook, so I like the fact that when I get home, the box is there, I come home, I take it all out, put it in the fridge, and I'm ready to go. Green Chef is the only meal kit that is both carbon and plastic offset. We offset 100% of our carbon footprint, as well as 100% of the plastic in every box. Go to greenchef.com/Connor60 and use code Connor60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
So I don't have that much time. So let's move on from the tennis. So you like Alcaraz and Med. Who do you think is winning?
You know what? I want to take Medvedev this week because the court's a little faster.
Okay.
And even though I want to see how he changes from the hammering he got last week, I think he can. I think he will. I think he learned something from that match last week, and he's going to use it to his advantage.
Okay, I'll take Carlitos for a friendly fiver. What do you say?
You got it.
Okay, good.
You got it.
And then on the other side,
I'll give you the pick.
Okay, I'm going to say they both get sunshine doubles because that's a fun storyline and I get to work it and it's more fun. And then if Pegula gets there and wins, that's fine with me too. If Medvedev wins, it's fine. And Kvitova wins. I mean, everyone who's still in it, I like. So, but I'm going to say two sunshine doubles. We'll be talking about it next week.
Sounds good. That's two good picks. All right.
You're on. $5. Okay, let's move on. Final four. This weekend. I haven't actually been watching too much of it. I've been working a lot. I've been kind of busy, but wanted to get your take. No seed higher than a four. First time in a long time, I think first time since seeding began in 79 that no one, two, or three seeds have made it to the final four.
Right. It's crazy, right? Back in the day, brother, you know, the final four and let's go back before that. March Madness was one of our favorite times of the year. It was, mm-hmm. Getting stuck into, all the games and so forth. But I just came from South Florida and South Florida is alive.
I bet.
They have Florida Atlantic, a small school in Boca Raton, Florida, which is, made it to the Final Four, and also Miami. Is in the Final Four. They play. They play Connecticut, and Florida Atlantic plays San Diego. So, I mean, if the South Florida double would come through, oh my God, the excitement down there would be incredible. But UConn is good. San Diego is good. So, let's face it. When you get to the Final Four, you're producing your best game, and all your players are firing on all cylinders, and had to play great basketball to get there. I hope that the games are all they should be to live up to the Final Four, because if that'd be the case, the long shot of Florida Atlantic mm-hmm. would be an amazing story.
Totally.
It would be fun to see. But Connecticut is as we know is tough, and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, UConn definitely has the most prestige, having won multiple national titles in the past. They have probably the best talent, I guess, if you were to break it down. But Florida Atlantic would be great. Any one of the other three teams would be great, because San Diego State's just down the road. I have a lot of buddies from high school, went to San Diego State, and spent a lot of time down there. Miami's cool because, they haven't been that good in a long time, normally considered a football school, and we used to live in Miami. And then Florida Atlantic.
And our friend Eddie Dibbs, who went to the University of Miami, is going to be watching every shot.
Yep. I wonder, does he have a future bet on it? I hope so.
I'll call him and ask him.
Yeah, we got to get him on the show, man. He's one of the guys we definitely got to get. But FAU, do you remember when I went to Arizona for a couple years, and then I left Arizona and worked for about 2 years, and then I was looking to go back to school to finish, and we were in Florida for a trip, and I went and looked at a couple schools. Miami was one, and then actually one was Florida Atlantic, up the coast in Boca with my buddy Todd Bernhagen. We went and checked it out and had a little fun up there. So it's cool to see. It's kind of, and my buddy, my photographer friend who we met last week in Indian Wells, Mauricio, he does a lot of work. He lives right close by. He does a lot of work for their athletic department and puts up a lot of great pictures. So I know he'll be following and pumped to see how they do. So who do you like? Give me your pick.
I'm taking Florida Atlantic.
I like it.
I like the story. And I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. I'm not like that because, I follow it, but, not like I used to. But the story would be amazing for college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
That a program like that has been able to, to come out and to compete with all the, the high-powered, college programs, from Connecticut to Alabama to Michigan, to Michigan
Duke
State, to, you name it, Duke and NC State and name every high power basketball school in the country. And Florida Atlantic has come out to compete with that. That's amazing.
Yep. I think UConn's going to win. So I guess if I had to pick, I'd say UConn, but my heart would be with FAU or San Diego State, just cause I'm a Cali guy. So I always root for California teams, when they do well. So cool. We'll be watching that. We'll talk about it a little next week. Let's move on. what? We'll be previewing more next week. We could just do a little bit today, but the Masters starts in about 10 days. What do you think about that? I got some odds here.
That's an exciting time of year, isn't it? And, mm-hmm. and that's going to be interesting, you know, with a lot of these good young players. Well, one, is Tiger going to play? You know, is and I guess the other thing is he hasn't played since when? How many weeks has he taken off now? And is he going to be able to, you know, handle the walk and,
right.
you know, the 4 days? And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, whirlwinds surrounding him still. And then you look at all the great young players, not the ones that we hear about, you know, the Justin Thomas and the Jordan Spieth and you know, the players like that. But, you know, but the new names that are coming up that are, you know, trying to break in and make their legacy, you know, by winning something like the Masters. And so it's going to be fun to see.
Yep.
Who's going to come out on top and, you know, and of course,
let me give you some of the odds. John Rahm's the favorite. He's like 7.5 to 1. Scottie Scheffler, I think he won last year, right? 8 to 1.
Right.
Wow. Rory McIlroy, about 9 to 1. Cameron Smith, 12 to 1. Jordan Spieth, 15 to 1. Thomas, 16 to 1. Xander Schauffele, 18. Finau, 20. Here's one I like that I think I'm going to bet on every slam going forward is Will Zalatoris. He's 20 to 1. And I feel like mm-hmm. he's eventually going to win a slam, like, and not like in the next 12 years, probably like in the next 2 years. And so I feel like
he certainly has the game, doesn't he? His putting, I guess sometimes I know they talk about his putting, but you know, still he has gotten to a certain level and, you know, the highest level in the game of golf. There can't be any part of his game that's not exceptionally great.
Right.
You know, it's just some parts are better than the other. I like that pick. I like him. And the other one I like is Schauffele, Xander Schauffele.
Yep. Schauffele.
He's a ball striker also. And it seems like he's at the top every major. He just, you know, brings his game and methodically goes about the way he plays and sticks with it. And just brings it, you know, yep. all the time. So
there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys. I mean, we didn't even get to Morikawa, 22 to 1, Homa, 22, Cantley, 22, Dustin Johnson. You know, what about all the LIV guys? I think this is the first time a lot of them are going to be playing together because we're in a lot of the majors early last year.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
That'll be fun to watch. Hideki, 33 to 1, former champ.
I'm a Hideki fan. I like him.
Me
anyway.
Too. I love him.
I hope he does well.
Me too. So we'll get into that more next week. But I just wanted to, you know, remind everyone that we're excited here, looking forward to it. Let's just skip around to some other sports news before we wrap up. Did you see the Commanders? A couple NFL stories. Commanders. There's a $6 billion bid on the Commanders.
Yeah.
With a
that's, B? That's amazing. We should have gotten into owning a football team back in the day, brother.
Right. We should have bought in on the Lakers with Genie. You know, so
yeah, wouldn't that have been nice? Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah, that would be something. And, you know, that what a precedent that's set. You know, I know the value of basketball and football. The teams are incredible. But $6 billion, that's with a B.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing number. And, you know, I can't see why they wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
If the team is competitive and, you know, they get the right players and they create the interest and the excitement, you know, to draw the fans, why not?
Do you think, because it seems like it's a jump, I feel like, I don't know exactly, but the last team had to be like $4.5 billion. It feels like there's a decent sized jump in the price.
Yeah.
Do you think a little bit of that is because everybody wants to kind of get rid of Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Commanders, because there's, you know, a lot of history with him. There's, you know, there's been this rumor, kind of conspiracy story floating around that, you know, Snyder has dirt on a lot of the owners or on the NFL, and, you know, he's like threatening to expose it or something like that. And so, like, you know, I think a lot of the other owners just want him like out of the club. And so, like, that in a way is almost giving him leverage, right? Because he's like, oh, you really want me out? Well, you better give me more money, right?
Right. Well, yeah, it could be. You know, the team is only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it.
Right.
You know, and it's like a house or like a piece of land or, you know, like a car, whatever. You know, you can put an asking price, any asking price you want on anything. But if somebody's willing to pay for it, then if you set the price and, you know, let it go. You know, there's a lot of things you could do with that kind of money, but you know, but also, I mean, if he's been in there that long, there's got to be a love of his, right? Don't you think owning a football team and
being in that
club is something that he's loved, and it's gonna be hurtful to have him get rid of it.
I think so. I mean, think about it. The Commanders aren't even like a winning team often. You know, like they haven't been that great the last 15, 20 years. And if they're getting $6 billion, what's a team like, I don't know, like the Patriots or, you know, the Giants or some team, you know, with a better reputation, you know, Chiefs, whatever,
right.
You know, the Eagles.
Right, man. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a very good
point. So you're right. It's going to set a precedent to where, like, if any of the other teams who have a better winning record or come from a bigger, you know, media market or whatever can demand more than $6 billion. Mm-hmm. So,
boy, it'd be a good thing to keep an eye on.
Yep. We'll keep an eye. A couple AFC East tidbits here. My poor division, like I'm still waiting for it to become a weak division where maybe we're one of the top one or two teams. But looks like, Aaron Rodgers is going to end up going to the Jets. I don't think it's happened yet, but there's tons of rumors about it. The Dolphins did sign Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Ramsey. Traded him from the Rams, got him. So now we have a really, really good secondary. We've gone all in with this roster. We've traded so many of our draft picks and cashed in our draft picks from the Laremy Tunsil trade. And so, you know, now we have like everybody, we just need Tua to stay healthy and, you know, try and win some games. So what do you think about those two?
Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers, leaving Green Bay. I mean, that was his team from the very beginning. And, for him to leave there and want to go to the Jets. I can see, being with a team, for a long time that, the player's dissatisfied, the team's dissatisfied, but, they've had a good run. They were Super Bowl champions and, but not as of late. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I guess sometimes it gets to the point where, he's getting a little bit older and, maybe they're thinking they want to do something different with their future. So to me, Aaron Rodgers is, one of the best of the best. Mm-hmm. So for him to go to the Jets if they can have some good receivers around him and a good line to protect him a little bit, I mean, they could do some damage there. And I know that might be, close to your heart, to your Miami Dolphins, but that could be a difference in, that team being a contender or not, I think.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, and every team in the AFC East is good. I mean, they're all deep. They all had, I think, winning records last year. I mean, the Patriots kind of battling it out with the Jets, but we'll see how it goes. Jalen Ramsey will be matching up against him in the secondary a couple times a year. A couple last things here before we go. I got to get in the shower and do the ad read. I got to do the ad read that you guys all love listening to and fast forwarding through, I'm sure. But one fun story. I take Bella on night walks, We do what's called Neighborhood Watch. We walk around, I bring my golf club just to keep safe. So we went up to 7-Eleven the other night to grab, a couple snacks and some water. Coming around the corner, like right off of Olympic, we live like near Olympic and Sepulveda, which are two pretty big streets in Los Angeles. We come around the corner and sitting about 25, 30 feet away from us, just sitting in the middle of the street looking at us is a coyote.
Oh, you're kidding.
Middle of Los Angeles. Oh. Yeah. And so Bella's instinct is to run after it. So I have to kind of grab her. And so then I take my phone out and I start filming it. Cause I'm like, there's a coyote right on my street, I got to get proof. And so it starts kind of walking away. So we start walking towards our house cause he's walking down that street away from us. And so we're walking and Bella keeps trying to kind of go and I have to keep her close. I don't have her on a leash cause I don't have it, going. And so we go and it looks like he's going to kind of go around this car and probably just take off. So we keep going and he doubles back and comes around the car and comes straight at us. And so
Yeah. What'd Bella do?
Bella takes off after it. So it comes at us. So her instinct is, play or what is that? Runs after it. And so now Bella is in between me and the coyote. So I've lost control of the situation completely. Still rolling on the camera. Don't worry.
Right.
Of course.
But Brett, we got to tell our listeners, for those who are just tuning in, Bella is your
four-year-old
golden doodle.
Yeah. Yep. The mascot.
Yeah. The mascot. Right. She's Advantage Connors mascot.
She's napping right underneath the table with me right now. She's doing her little nappy twitches with her face. She starts dreaming and stuff. So, so she takes off after it.
Doll.
Yeah. She's great. She takes off after it and I panic and I start running after it. And then it kind of gets scared and just kind of scampers off. And like, I grab Bella and then we go inside the apartment and tell Melina all about it, you know? So,
oh boy,
that was our coyote story of the week. What do you think? I saw you put out a tweet before we go. Talk to me about this tweet. I saw you put it up. It was a picture of you, Borg, McEnroe, and Lendl. And I'm guessing it was the Masters. What year was that?
Yeah, it must have been 1980, I think. Yeah. 80 or 81, somewhere around there. I know pretty close.
And you said, what was your tweet said? You said, four badass motherfuckers.
Yeah, well.
MFers. Okay, sorry.
Is that the way it came out?
Mm-hmm. That's how I read it in your voice.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that picture to me, you know, was, you know, we were missing a few guys in there. You know, Nasty could have been in there. Vitas Gerulaitis could have been in there. Vilas could have been in there, you know, with us and all is a part of that. But, you know, there was a time, you know, when the four of us were, you know, kind of running the game and ruling the game, which was kind of fun. And you know, to see a picture like that, especially, Jesus, you know, that's 42 years ago, something, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. And you know, to see that and remember, you know, all the stadiums all around the world was, you know, was kind of fun. And I just said, you know, I put that up there. I said, you know, that four walked out there and we played each other. It was, you know, that's what it turned into. It turned into a great battle. And you know, whoever was playing the best that day was going to come out on top. But it was especially that picture. It was in Madison Square Garden back then. So it was a good picture for me to see.
Yeah, that it's a good one. So in the 80s, it was at MSG. I thought it looked like it could have been the cover of an album for your band. You guys look like you could have been like the band Chicago or something with you got your plaid shirt or someone, Lindell's got a plaid shirt and you got the bowl cut with the beard and then Bjorn's got the long hair, but no beard and Max on the car. Like everybody's got like kind of that, like that time period, a different version of the look, you know? And so it almost looks like you're like a band,
yeah,
you know, like
we didn't look the same.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what was great.
Yeah. We all had our own identity and we were our own characters and our own charisma and our own attitudes and all that. And the mixed and the way we mixed and matched against each other was, you know, Borg needed some fire on the other side. You know, when I played Lendl, you know, we had a battle cause we had a good rivalry and, you know, attitude against attitude. And, you know, me and Mac had a great rivalry because we didn't like each other and, you know, and all of that. I mean, there was always something more than just the tennis that was going to be out there on the court when we played. And that just kind of, you know, for me, you know, and, you know, hopefully, you know, that was the same with the other guys when they played me too.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. One question. How about we do this? Let's say you guys were a four-piece band. Who's playing what instrument?
Let's see. That's actually a very good question. Very good question. I think that McEnroe would probably be on the guitar. Borg would be on the piano.
Or singing, right? I feel like. Think he'd sing?
He'd be a singer. Yeah, he might be. He could. Yeah, I don't know if he could sing or not.
The quiet guy who writes. Now, I'm not saying like who actually is good at the instruments. I'm saying like who's the guy who's going to set the beat. Like who's the drummer? Who's the guy who's the craziest? Is probably going to set the beat, and then the bass line, you know, or the guitarist. You know, I don't know. It's just for fun. Like it doesn't have to be if he's got a good voice or not. I just mean like, you know, pretend you guys were a band because it looks like a cover. It looks like the cover of a Chicago band or something.
No, I mean I think you're right with. I think you're right with Borg like that, that you'd be the quiet one, the one writing the music and one kind of staying in the background and letting the other guys be out front a little bit more. I don't know. I think for me, I think I wouldn't mind being on the drums, you know, that way I could get a lot of my frustration and everything like that, out, which would have been good. So
I like that.
And yeah, and maybe put Lindell on the piano. That would be good. But
I like that. On guitar, singing.
That's a pretty good question, Brett. That's a good question. I'm gonna have to think about that. We'll talk about that again.
Okay, I like it. If I did it, I would say Borg singing, because he's like quiet, you know, melancholy, but, you know, inside a lot's probably going on, so that he writes all the good lyrics. Mac on guitar, because he likes playing guitar. You as the drummer, getting out everything. And then Lindell on bass. How's that? Lindell looks like the tall bass player. Yeah, like every band has a tall bass player.
That's not bad. Right. I don't know. The only thing I got to ask you, think we'd have had any hits?
Yeah, just a few.
It would have been great.
All right, let's wrap up. Anything what are you doing the rest of the day? Anything fun? I got to get in the shower and get going.
Now I've been gone for a couple of days, so I'm back to work, and it's starting to rain up here now. So got to take care of a few things before the rain comes, and just kind of taking it easy. And once again, thanking all our listeners for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed, you know, our last number of a podcast. And don't forget to follow us on, you can follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, and at ADV Connors, at Brett_Connors.
That's me. That sounds good. Follow you on your Facebook page. You can follow at Gold Dude Isabella, all that stuff. One last thing, if you're looking for something to watch, the fourth and final season of Succession started on Sunday. We're big Succession fans here in LA. I know you haven't gotten into it with Mom, but I think you should. It's pretty good. Brian Cox, who's kind of the main star, the dad, is amazing. And it's got a bunch of other...
I like him. He's a great actor. I like him.
Great actor.
I like him a lot.
He was in Super Troopers, which was also another great movie. What's his name? Culkin. Kieran Culkin, I think? He's great as Roman. There's a bunch of great actors and actresses in it. Check it out. It's fun. Every Sunday night, I think, on HBO. So that's it. I'm going to get in the shower. I'm going to do the ad read, and I'm going to get to work and watch some tennis.
Get to it. Thanks for having me on again, Bretter. I love you, and be careful today, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Sounds good. Glad that you're home and you made it home safe. Tell Mom hi, and I'll check in with you guys tomorrow. Love you.
Peace.
Bye.